I was like, what just happened? That's not the norm. Okay, let's roll. And so that series has 5 books. I really like them. I really liked the direction they were going in. People were enjoying them, but Kensington kind of felt like it was time to end that series and hopefully move into a different direction. I had been doing, Kensington puts on these really great cozy cons that Larissa runs a lot of. She's amazing at doing these. And I was getting a lot of younger readers who were coming over, and they're like, I love cozies. I kind of wish the characters were a little more like me, a little more flawed, personally, not necessarily relationship-wise, but, like, personally, stuff going on. And I said, okay, well, what else do you want? And they just said, you know, I also kind of want where they fall in love, but it's not easy. And I said, so you want a romance and a cozy together, but not a standard romance where there's a big black moment and all that kind of stuff. And they're like, yeah, kind of. So I went to Essie and I said, look, this is what I'm hearing. She took it to one of her meetings a couple months later, and I had already turned in Much Ado About Nauticling. It was a little different, a little more traditional. And she came back via email, and she's like, so I just took this to the meeting, and they really want to do it. And I had said from the beginning, I'm not asking you to let me be the only one to do these. I understand if you have authors that have bigger followings that you kind of want to put into the spotlight, but I would really like at least the opportunity to show you what I can do. And so Essie said, how do you feel about changing Much Ado About Nauticling? And I said, oh, well, I'll send you the original. She was like, what? I said, well, that's how I write them in the beginning. And then I make them more traditional so that it's something that you feel Kensington would be able to get behind. So I sent her the original, and here we are.
Because Kensington, as long as I've been at the library, I know they've published cozies, and they did have a line of mysteries. But after the Berkeley prime crime shakeup, and they took on a lot more, they picked up the mantle a lot with Crooked Lane Books, and they really expanded their line. And I just saw that now they're going to have a whole new division, Kensington Mysteries, and Larissa's going to head it up. Larissa lives in the same county I do.
Oh, and, okay.
So we had connected over me trying to find a galley of another book last year.
Oh, and, very cool.
Yeah, so it's been a really great relationship because she gets me authors for the show.
Yeah.
But I think it's really great that they're going to have their own, I guess, imprint.
That would be, I think that would be what they will end up calling it, yeah.
And it'll just be a separate division devoted strictly to mysteries. Which I think
it's going to be exciting.
It's very exciting. And I think to be part of it, you know, for you and for the rest of them, it's just.
Yes. Yes. Well, and I like that they're going in that direction. I know for a long time they were very, very, very well known for their romances. And they kind of were getting into the mysteries, not necessarily committing as fully to it. Because I believe most mysteries came out with just the mystery line on the spine of the book, whereas their romances, they had a ton of different lines within their imprint, which would be Zebra. And so seeing that they want to move in this direction is really encouraging. And people love mysteries. I have a book tour, I guess you would call it, going on Instagram right now, and Larissa was able to get Much Ado About Nauticling into a lot of people's hands who read primarily romances. And it's really funny to watch all of these comments, and very wonderful to watch all of these comments that are like, I don't normally read cozy mysteries, but oh my gosh, I flew through this one, and you know, I'm definitely going to go try out the rest of the cozy mystery line because I didn't realize exactly what these were. And so I like that the crossover is happening. I think it's kind of been on the brink for a while. And I hope that this is just the beginning of, you know, a run into both romance and cozy mystery getting a bump.
What's the Instagram tour? If people, is it still going on? If people want to follow it,
it is.
How would they find it?
I think the hashtag that everyone is using is Much Ado About Nauticaling. So hashtag Much Ado About Nauticaling.
Okay.
And hashtag Gabby Allen Speaks. SPEAKS.
Okay.
I believe those are the two ways that you can definitely find it. Obviously, some people have like 72 hashtags. So there's a lot of like book addicts and readers, anonymous, and all different kinds of things. But those are the two terms that I am finding in every single post, which I'm going and liking them all because they're adorable. I love what people are doing with this book. They're putting it at the pool. They're taking pictures of it in front of like, there's this one, I don't remember which Instagrammer it is, but she has it in front of this beautiful mural of like a mermaid. And it's just, I love, people are reading with their cats. I had one today. She and her cat, Miss Taco, were very excited to read the book. And I was like, I adore that you have a Miss Taco. It's so fun. So I'm really enjoying. Instagram is not something that I've done previously. I've had one, but I mainly focused on Facebook because that was where most of my interaction was. And so since Gabby Allen is a different name, I wanted to choose a different platform so that I wasn't double dipping on both on one platform with two different names. And so my original name is over on Facebook, and then my Gabby Allen name is over on Instagram. So on Facebook, I'm Misty Simon, and on Instagram, I'm Gabby Allen, and they're both the same, which is funny. Somebody just said on Facebook the other day, they posted, oh, how did I not realize this is you? The picture looks exactly the same, except it's black and white. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It's right there.
I will put all these in the comments on the stream after we're finished because I can't do that much multitasking.
Oh no, don't even worry about it. And I am more than happy to send you an email with all the links and stuff if you like, if that makes it easier.
Oh, that would be super. Thank you.
Absolutely. I have a document that's all set up with that stuff.
Oh, great.
So that I don't have to remember what I am supposed to give you. So, and you're more than welcome to pick and choose whichever links you want to put down in the comments. I'm open to whatever.
Okay. And let me share this, my screen, so that people can see the cover of your book.
Sure.
There it is in all its glory.
So cute.
It's adorable, and I love the flags.
Yes. Absolutely.
And actually, there's even a beach scene behind it, if you can see.
Mm-hmm. With the palm trees.
Yep.
I love the cat, too. So there was another Instagrammer the other day, and she took a picture of herself. It's the book in front of her. She's kind of got her head tipped a little bit. And then she made a tinfoil hat.
Oh, my gosh.
That looks like Mr. Whiskers' hat. Miss Whiskers' hat, since Whiskers is a girl. But I was like, oh, my gosh, I am so digging your hat. That is adorable. And I love the creativity that people are coming in with on putting this on different backgrounds and the comments that they're making and the love that they're giving to it. There have been a couple like, this wasn't quite my, and I'm like, that's fine too. Not every book is going to be for every person, but I really do appreciate people taking a chance on it and seeing if maybe it is for them. And there are a lot of people who are really enjoying it and picking up pieces of it that I didn't realize you were going to like quite so much. I know that the grandparents are Goldie and Pops. And Goldie is one of those grandmothers who does not want to be called Grandma. Don't call her Gam, don't call her Grammy, nothing. She is Goldie, and that is it. And she walks around in her high heels and her bathing suit with her see-through wrap. And, you know, Wit is often like, please stop trailing sand everywhere. I'd really appreciate it if you'd wipe your feet before you came in. And she just is she's over the top, but she loves what she's doing. And I love who she is. And she is a really neat counterpoint then to Pops, who is far more down to earth. He makes treasure chests for the novelty store that Wit also runs on top of helping with the glass bottom boat tours. And it's something that my grandfather actually used to do. So he would, they had a boat forever. It was called the Ruby Yacht. And it was a 27 or so, I think, foot wooden boat. And they would sail it, and they would sail it over to Catalina. And then they would take my cousin out, because he was younger, on adventures. And my grandfather would make a map and burn the edges.
Oh, wow.
And my cousin would find it on the ocean or on the shore in a glass bottle, and he would pull it out, and they would go searching for this treasure chest that, you know, sometimes had a car in it. Maybe it had, you know, like a set of marbles or something like that. But the experience is something. My cousin's 50 now, and he still, to this day, talks about how awesome that was. And I just thought that that would be a really neat thing to put into the story. My grandfather's been gone for 17 years now, and my mom read the book, and she's like, "Ooh, that first chapter." And I was like, "I know, it's Granddad." And she's like, "It is." And he's right there. And I loved being able to share him with people who will never get to know him. And just his creativity. So, and Goldie is my grandmother times like 10. Because my grandmother was still dancing for Arthur Murray Studio at 92.
Wow.
And you need to be careful if you're in the kitchen with her, because you may end up in a cha-cha. I'm just saying. and it's, you know, she didn't walk around in the bathing suit with the wrap all the time, but she did still wear heels. And if she was going out to get the mail, she needed to have the full makeup face on and stuff. And I just thought how neat it would be to show them as, you know, when you're writing a book, a lot of times you will start out with somebody that you know to kind of base the character on. I was just talking about this on a podcast that I did yesterday. And nine times out of 10, they become their own person. I would say 9.9 times out of 10, they become their own person. And so as I'm writing it, yes, at first I was thinking of my grandparents. At the end, and while I'm editing it, Goldie and Pops are their own people that are doing their own things, but with the flavor of who my grandparents were. So I love it. I love it. And I love that people are loving it.
So your characters,
yes.
Do you plot them out ahead of time? Do you have a Bible with each character and what they look like and their attributes? And did any surprise you and you were like, stop doing that, stop doing that? And then like you had to rewrite them to...
That is a fantastic question.
I love that question.
It's a great one. So, yes, on the Bible, but it's one. So what I do is I start an Excel spreadsheet, and the first page of the Excel spreadsheet is who all the characters are. And so I pop, but very simple lines, like Wit looks like this, does this, here's her backstory. Nick looks like this, does this, here's his backstory. Just as like a jumping off point. It's usually for the secondary characters more than anything, so that I don't think his name was Matt. And then in book three, I make him like Michael, because I kind of have to explain why the person has changed. In my very first series, actually book one, her dad's name was Henry. And I didn't realize that in book two, I made it Stan. And he's Stan in books two through five. But in book one, he was Henry. And so when I republished those with a different publisher, because the first one shut down, I did change it to Stan. And no one had ever mentioned it. So I was like, oh, okay, well, either it didn't make an impression or the books were far enough apart you didn't worry about it. But so to help myself, because I do have 50 books out. I think it's 50. It might be 49. But that's a lot of people upstairs. And that's a lot of not wanting to double do names either. And so I can look through my Bibles and say, you know, how many times have you used this name? If it's going to be a different name, like a a name that you don't see very often. You don't want to have that person be in three different books if it's not the same person. And so that's page one. Page two is usually a breakdown of the bigger characters. Like, who is Wit? What does she do? I will be honest that I would say most times what I do is I start out with a small concept of who I want her to be. And then I start writing the book and she becomes who she is. And then I make notes afterwards that show the decisions that I ended up making throughout. So I don't over-characterize her in the beginning. I know some people use what they call character sheets. I know I use them when I was newer, but I think after 50 books, I've kind of gotten into a rhythm of how things work, and so I don't need them quite as much anymore. Some character sheets are like name, date of birth, what's their sign, did you do their birth chart, what's their favorite memory, what's their worst memory, what was their childhood like? And so I don't necessarily go through all of that anymore at the beginning, but I do know it by the end. With Wit, I struggled with her a couple of times, just not exactly sure who she was. And so I do have a couple of documents that I literally named "Who Are You, Wit?" I just started writing kind of like I was journaling as her. And figured some stuff out that then went into the Bible that then I could use later on. So, yes and no, I guess, to your question. Goldie definitely was, I knew who I wanted her to be. She did change a little, and I was like, stop it. That's not what you're supposed to be doing. All right, fine. Roll with it, and we'll see what happens. And quite frankly, rolling with it was exactly what should have happened. Other stories, though, years ago, I let somebody go off on their rabbit trail, and I had to yank them back and cut out like 30,000 words of a book because I was like, that did not at all go where it was supposed to go, and I don't like the way, I don't like the train that we're on right now, so we're going to pull you back, and we're going to do it the way I wanted to in the beginning. So I do tend to... I have a process, so I do mind mapping, which some people call the snowflake method, bubbling, there's a bunch of different names for it, but basically I take like an 18 by 26 piece of artist paper, and in the middle circle is who's dead. And then from who's dead, I spike off when, where, how, you know, the reporter questions. And then red herrings, and how is my sleuth going to grow during this book? I take that and I put it into what I call a timeline, because if I use the word outline, I start getting hives because I think I'm in high school. Let's not do that. And so once I timeline it, that's pretty close to a synopsis. And so I will stay on there for the most part because it is a well-thought-out story and it does give me the opportunity to see if there are plot holes. So, but it's vague enough that I can play with certain things if they pop up. The second book that's going to come out next year from Gabby Allen is called Something Fishy This Way Comes. And there were definitely a couple of places where I totally went off the rails, and I was very excited to have done that. So I try to stay open to the flow. It's a creative process. No matter what you do, no matter if you're writing a specific thing, or, I mean, you just have to, I think, be open to also remembering that you're making this up, which means that you get to do what you want with it.
So you usually know who the murderer is and who the motive from your snowflake, or not really?
Yes, usually. I will say I wrote a book once. It was the sixth in a series. And I had it all figured out. I knew exactly what was happening. I knew who had killed them. I got to like page probably 250 out of 320. And I was like, uh-oh, my killer just died. This is not a good thing. What happened there? And then I was like, oh my gosh, I know who the actual killer is. Oh, this is going to be epic. And so I, like I said, I do try to stay open to that so that I'm not so dug down into what I want to happen that I am unwilling to flow with what seems to be happening. But yes, for the most part, because I tend to I mind map kind of backwards sometimes. So if I know who's dead and I know who killed him, I will start working backwards this way to why that would have happened. And so because that's such an integral part of the story for me, and the way I write things, I kind of need to know who has done it so that I can drop the red herrings and the clues in there appropriately as we go along. Not everybody does it that way. I do have a podcast that I do on my own called Out on a Limb with Gabby Allen, and I invite other authors and publishers and editors, that kind of thing, to talk to me. And I have found that some people write by what they call the headlights. So they only write as far as they can see. And that, like me, that might be two chapters. And then they write two more chapters. And some people don't even know the names of their characters before they start. I am way too inattentive for that. I can't process that. I actually cannot start writing a book until I have a title. I write to the title. So previous titles that I've had, Cremains of the Day, Grounds for Remorse, Deceased and Desist, Varnished Without a Trace, Carpe Diem, like I have to know what it's called. Poison Ivy, The Wrong Drawers, Something Old, Something Dead, Hoedown Showdown. I need to know what my end goal is, I guess, which is what the title ends up being to me. And then I know where I'm going from there. But without that title, I will sit there for days and go, come on, you need to give me a title. Help me out here. I can't start. I did try starting once without a title. It was such a flop. And then as soon as I got the title, I was off and running. So I just trust that as part of, that's just part of my process. I have to have it. Some people don't care.
So Kensington gives you that freedom to pick your own title?
So with most publishers that I have worked with, so I've been with Harlequin, I did the Wild Rose Press, I've done Dramar, I've been with Kensington. As far as I know, most publishers, you submit the book with a title. If they like it, they keep it. If they don't like it, or if they think it needs to be something else, they'll start like working with you on what it might be called. I have actually never had a title changed. So I always have been the one to give them the title. And the Essie at a conference, the conference after I sold her the book, she was like talking about how they all snicker, and they would just say the title to each other as they were walking by of Cremains of the Day. I'm like, okay, I think it's funny too, but I'm really jazzed that you guys are like using it as that inside joke. And I think that a catchy title is something that people look for, and they're intrigued by that. And I also try really hard to choose titles that are not already out there. The only title that I've doubled up on that I know of is Deceased and Desist. And I had named that book like 2 years earlier, and then somebody came out with a book called that like literally 2 months before my book was coming out. It might have been 3 months. And I was like, ooh, okay. I'm gonna be all right. You're going to be okay. Stop it. You're fine. You can't. And then I emailed Essie, is there any way we can change this? And she was like, no, the galleys are out. Like, we can't. And I was like, all right. I'll make peace with it. But, you know, I mean, it's just, again, it's another piece of the way that I write. I do like to have titles that no one has done that I know of. So Much Ado About Nautically is a little closer to other titles than I'm used to. But I loved it so much. And Wit, you know, I did a lot of Shakespeare stuff in college.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because that sounds Shakespeare and Something Fishy This Way Comes.
Exactly. Yeah. So she tends to think in whatever profession she's in. So because she used to work at the railroad, my aunt used to, so the containers come in through Long Beach, they set them down, and then they put them on trains, sometimes double stacked, and they send them out to wherever they're supposed to go. She managed that whole thing. And it's a lot to do. And so that was the job that I gave Wit, was that she was the stacker and making sure that, you know, things were going where they're supposed to go. And so the more that I worked with that, the more I was like, okay, but she has to have something else that she likes. Okay, well, I'm going to give her Shakespeare because that would be a lot of fun. But she, when she was working at the railroad, she would think in terms of tracks and switches and, you know, locomotion and that kind of thing. And now that she's on the island, I think one of the things that I'm subtly going to try to do, but now I'm outing myself, is to switch her idea framing more into the nautical aspect. And so it'll be like tides and, you know, making sure that you are flipping your oars and that kind of thing. So I like those. I like those kind of things. I think they add to the personality of the character. It makes them individual.
And Much Ado About Nauticling has got some really good reviews from Library Journal, Publishers Weekly, and Kirkus, even Kirkus, because in the past couple years, I have found that Kirkus is down on every book they've read.
It's funny because Larissa sent me the Kirkus review, and it's like, we love the setting. The story was okay, but the setting. And I was like, wow, should I be concerned?
No, that's high praise from Kirkus.
That's exactly what she said. She said, oh, no, that's like fantastic. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm glad you like the setting. Actually, I've had a lot of compliments on the setting, which is funny because that was not something that I intentionally did. It's just how I tend to write. And I've had people like, I felt the breeze blowing through my hair and I could smell the sun and the sand and I was like, that's awesome. I'm going to now have to do that deliberately because that was not my intention. I'm glad that it's there, obviously. And I'm sure in the back of my head, I do like settings, but it wasn't like, oh, I need to make sure that everybody can smell the breeze. Oh, I need to make sure that everybody can feel the fronds of the palm. That was not something that I was deliberately setting out to do, and now I'm like, you better make sure that's in every book.
Go ahead. But I think it's great that like you're getting these really great reviews.
Yes.
Because I feel like your book is a trade paperback, so it's almost the size of a hardcover.
Yes.
It's not the mass market, the smaller ones, which now Kensington makes. Are they called mass market?
They're Mass Max, I think.
They're bigger.
Called. Yeah, they're Varnished Without a Trace, which was the last tally, came out as a Mass Max, as opposed to the rest of them being just a mass market paper.
Which would drive me nuts that they didn't all fit on the shelf properly. But I think
I asked too, because they're like, we're going to do Mass Max. And I'm like, well, you're doing Varnish Without a Trace as a regular mass, right? Because like it needs to fit. And they're like, oh, don't even worry about it. And I got them in the mail, and I was like, all right, well, we'll just play with the fact that it's this one's a bigger book. It's bigger than the rest.
You know, I think it's really great that Cozy Mysteries are getting full review treatment, that it's not just a column like, these are the Cozy Mysteries coming out.
Right. I really do like that people are digging in. I don't know if it's that people for so long thought, well, you know, I haven't watched Murder, She Wrote since the 80s. I'm probably not going to be into something like this. Or if they just were so wrapped up in the genre that they're used to reading that they didn't move into the cozy mystery sphere, but I really do love that people are giving them a chance because they're awesome. I mean, I like all genres. I have been a reader since I was tiny. I still have my very first book, The Maggie Bee. And I read everything. I'm not a huge sci-fi reader if you're going to show me how to make my own ship. Those are a little too technical for me. But fantasy, thrillers, all that kind of stuff, nonfiction, I love it all. I have spent a ton of time in the library, especially over the summers. I would go in and like walk out with 12 books. And my mom's like, ah. And I'm like, oh no, I'll definitely have these done. And I loved my librarian, both at my high school My middle school, I guess that wouldn't be both anymore. All the schools that I went to, as well as the local library, I mean, I was like a fixture. And I think that, you know, you can absolutely love one kind of genre, but I think every once in a while you should step outside and see if there isn't something that you like over here too. Because then you could, like, use it as a palate cleanser. I used to read a lot of romance, and it would be like boom, 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 boom. Like, I'd read like 15 Debbie Maycombers at a time, and then throw a Nora Roberts in there, and another Nora Roberts, and probably another Nora Roberts, because I was trying to catch up on the J.D. Robb stuff. And I would get a little, like, meh, jaded. You know, I knew what the story was going to be like. I knew that it was going to have a happy ending. As soon as I started it and saw what her issue was, I kind of already knew how the Black Moment was going to go. I still enjoyed them, but I think because I wasn't giving myself a break in between them, I was too anticipatory of how the story was going to go. And so then I did start, like, breaking off and reading David Eddings from 1984. I started reading a Clive Cussler, which I used to read a lot when I was younger. I would read a Jonathan Kellerman. And so in doing that, or an Alex Cross from James Patterson, in doing that, when I did get back to the romance, I was like, oh, yay! I was renewed to not feel like I've already read this. I felt like if when I went into different sections that I was able to appreciate each of them better. And quite frankly, the library is a pretty awesome place to be because you can read it and then take it back and reread it again and then take it back, as long as you're not, you know, on a waiting list for 25 years.
we try not to do that.
Right, and I appreciate that. Well, I love that you guys are able to, I'm assuming that you do, since this is something that we do, move books throughout your county. Do you guys do that?
We do, and actually, the system is a headquarters, two branches. We even still have a bookmobile, which is on blocks right now. And then we have seven smaller municipal libraries. But we've just joined a 39, now we're 48 library consortium with a county north of us, and two of the counties nearby each have a small library in there. And it's been amazing, the books that we can get.
Yes, isn't it?
I
love it.
Absolutely do. At first, our patrons were very much, what do you mean I'm 523 on the list? But then when they realized, A, how many copies there were,
yes,
and B, we're not going to get your copy from the furthest reach. If your local copy comes in, you're going to be next. It's been really great. And on my day off, I've been driving around to visit these libraries.
That's wonderful.
That's what my husband and I think of as dating.
Yes, as you do. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Right. And it's just, it's really nice to see the other libraries. Yeah. So, yeah, it's... You know, we've gone from 11 to 49 in overnight.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, your reach is bigger, too. Like, you have the ability to recommend something to someone. If you have a mid-20s woman coming in and she's like, I really need, like, this, this, and this. And you're like, oh, I know we don't have it on the shelf right now, but let me check really quick. And clicky-clacky-clicky. And you come back and you say, I can have it here for you in a week. And she's like, I would love that. I will be back. Just let me know. Like, that makes a difference because your spectrum of lending is so much bigger, but you don't have to have it all in-house.
Right.
Which I think people don't always understand, that just because it's not in-house doesn't mean I can't get it for you. And like you said, you know, it's not, if it's a super popular book, you're not going to have one. It's right. Not just going to be one coming in. You're going to have a couple, and hopefully people will read it within 2 weeks. And then it will be your turn.
Right.
My mom goes to the library over here. So I live in a little town called Mechanicsburg that was started by mechanics, which is how creative we are here in Pennsylvania. We actually, so if you're ever in this area for New Year's Eve, they pull the fire truck out on Main Street. They put an 8-foot wrench on the crane, and then they drop it as you're counting down to New Year's Eve. So it's the wrench drop, which I suppose I'm happy that I live in Mechanicsburg because Dillsburg drops a pickle. And the Yellow Breeches, or Lisburn, which is on the Yellow Breeches, drops their pants. They actually run pants up a flagpole.
Oh my.
Drop them. So, you know, we're creative over here. But our library actually used to be a field hospital during the Civil War.
Oh, wow. How so, cool is that? Yeah, is very
there's
cool.
A lot going on in that building. I won't lie. And it's right on the train tracks. So, like, you can be in there listening to everything, and then the train will come by, and it's a very quaint little town. My daughter's friends call it Fairy Town, because we also do Jubilee Day, which is the third Thursday of June. We did not the last 2 years because of everything that's going on, but it's like a 97-year-old festival, I think,
wow.
And it used to be the end of the season for the farmers. And so everyone would take the day off and come into town and just kind of catch up on what's been going on and trade food and that kind of stuff. And now it's the biggest, I think, one-day street fair on the East Coast. We sometimes have 60,000 people who come in for the day.
Wow.
So no one who actually lives here moves. Everybody who lives here stays home, and we just let all those other people, you know, run around. But, like, we have a church. It used to be a gallery, and now it's a delicatessen. We have, you know, a bank building that's now a window company, and, you know, the Eccles drugstore was actually used in Girl Interrupted. There's a scene with Winona Ryder, and they filmed it in there, and that actually plays on a little TV in the corner, like 24 hours a day. But Eccles Drugstore actually still has, it's a soda counter now, but they still have prescriptions from, like, the 1700s,
oh,
like
wow.
A prescription. And so it's just, we're this really cool melding, I guess, of new and super old. Super old.
So how did you make your decision to set your mystery in California instead of, although I will admit it would be hard to, you'd have to kill off half the town if it's a tiny town. I mean, when they come in for the festival, you know, you could do a little bit there, but.
That's true. So the Tally Griever mysteries, which were the other Kensington books, those are set in Mechanicsburg. I actually never call it Mechanicsburg, but it is Mechanicsburg. I actually had a guy email me a couple months ago, and his dad is not doing so well, but both of them have read the books. And so when his dad is having a particularly bad day, they'll actually drive around town and go to the places that I mention in the books.
Aww.
Because his dad remembers those because he's having some memory issues. That's pretty darn cool.
Yes.
I won't lie. I was like, I'm so glad this is an email because I can cry to myself before I respond. But I have another series that's called Adventures in Ghost Sitting, where it's a junkyard and everything in the junkyard has a ghost attached to it, and they're all very badly behaved. That is set in a kind of Mechanicsburg place. Tally is set in Mechanicsburg. I was like, I think you're going to have to move out a little. You need to, let's branch a little. And because I used to live in California, I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll do Lake Arrowhead. Because Lake Arrowhead, there's snow, they have the mountains, they have the lake, everybody lives around the lake, lots of stuff could happen up there. Their high school is called Rim of the World. So it's, you know, there's plenty that I could have done with it. And then at the time, I had an agent, and she was like, I don't know. Like, I like the idea. She lives in California, so she's familiar with the area. And she's like, I like the idea, but I think it's a little too close because even though you're moving to a different coast, the feeling is kind of going to be the same. Yes, you have skiers coming up. Yes, you're going to have tourists, but you have tourists the same kind of way in Mechanicsburg. And so I was like, okay, I'll go back to the drawing board. So I thought about it more, and I was like, you know what? Catalina has buffalo because in the early 1900s, somebody came over and did a movie, and they left the buffalo there. And so Catalina has never gotten rid of the buffalo. They just kind of do their thing. They all drive golf carts. I had gone over there because, so I lived in California from 13 to 28. And so we would do vacations over there, and they have like this whole camping ground that's these enormous teepees that you can stay in. And like, you have to walk your stuff back and you have to walk it back out. You cannot leave anything. Plus, the entire middle spine of the, island itself is protected due to certain animals that are over there, birds and rodents and that kind of thing. And so the more I thought about where in California had I been, I considered Lake Tahoe because I have been there before. Same kind of issues as with Lake Arrowhead. And I was like, okay, where else have I been? I don't really want to do San Diego because San Diego to certain people is like 12 different cities. So it's not just San Diego. A lot of people call anything that's in San Diego County, San Diego. And so I thought, oh my gosh, I can do Catalina. And I was like, okay, but you're going to have, like, you haven't been there since you were 16. You might want to go check it out. So I dragged my aunt over there, although dragging, she kind of bought the tickets and said, we're going. And, cause I happened to be there for a book signing, and, we had a blast. And I was like, oh yeah. No, there are definitely a lot of things to recommend this. It's not an island vacation point that's enormous, and has like resorts and that kind of stuff. It's more low key, and, it's very much influenced by Hollywood, in a lot of different ways. And like, there's a Wrigley Mansion over there. So, there are different things that can be played with, and I really like the golf carts. I won't lie.
I love that somebody left their buffalo there and just walked off and forgot them.
I don't know exactly how it happened, but they did. They brought them over to shoot. I think it was like a Western.
Oh, let's be clear, not shooting the buffalo. They were shooting them as a film.
Right.
So don't write in.
Yes, please don't write in. It's not that anybody was shooting the buffalo. They were filming and involving the buffalo. They needed buffalo for scenes. And then they just didn't take them with them when they left. And so yeah, the buffalo are there. Do not approach them. That's a bad idea. They're not just friendly just because they live on an island. But they actually have a lot of birders over there, too, a lot of bird watchers. And so something fishy this way comes involves the birding community. And they have golf courses, but they also have like one police station, and they have like one, grocery store. And so there's a juxtaposition that I really loved between all of the extra people coming in on what some people jokingly call the cattle boats, which is the Catalina Flyers. And so those people versus the ones that live there and have lived there for quite some time. I was talking to the one guy, and I have to verify this, but I don't think that you own land over there. I think you rent your land for 99 years and you own the house that's on it. And so there are people who have been there for generations and generations that have never left. So originally there were a lot of fishermen. And this is how the glass bottom boat came to be. I actually talked to the guy who runs the glass bottom boats over there, and I was like, so I'm an author. And he's like, okay. I really want to do glass bottom boats. And he's like, what? I said, so, like, how big is this? And who made it? And what? Some people, I think I overwhelmed some people with my amount of questions. The poor guy at the golf cart rental spot, I think he was looking to run, because I was like, can we chirp the tires? Like, is it okay to chirp? Can you? And he's like, please don't chirp the tires. You can't chirp them when you're driving away. You probably can chirp them while you're stopping, but please don't do that. So there used to be a lot of fishermen, and not that the catch dried up, but there wasn't as much need for it. And so they realized that people were fascinated with how shallow in some places the Avalon Bay is, which is Avalon is the town on Catalina Island. They do have another town up the way that only has 400 people, but Avalon's the bigger one. And so they started cutting out the bottom of their boats and installing glass so that they could take these tourists out kind of into the sea. You don't go too far in a glass bottom boat. You kind of stay local, but for them to be able to see that, and they made a lot of money. So there you go. That's how glass bottom boats came in Catalina.
Wow. That's something else. You know, I've been sitting here holding this yesterday. I hope everybody can see it. I got an envelope in the mail. And it had gotten this, the door, it's a stack of door hangers. And this must have gotten caught in a machine. And I was like, what is this?
Oh.
But it's so wonderful. It's a stack of autographed door hangers. And it's, I'm reading, "Disturb me and you'll walk the plank." So I'm going to figure out how we're going to distribute these maybe at our end of our summer reading club program.
I would love that. However you want to do it. And I do have more. So if you want more, just let me know. I'd be happy to sign them and get it out your way. I love the door hangers. To me, you can put it on your door. You could tape it on your forehead if you really need to, just to like let people know what you're doing. You can also use it as a bookmark, though.
Yes.
And I like that it has a dual purpose there. So they were a lot of fun to make, too. I actually made those myself. And I thought, you know what? These are going to be a lot of fun because I think people can enjoy. And you can use it in different books, too. So it's not something that you can only have once.
Well, right now we're doing a pun Olympics, a pun title Olympics on Instagram with books with pun titles. So
good.
These will fit right in. And we also have Kensington has a program where the Cozy Club, I think, where if you read a cozy, your librarian marks it off, and when you read 10, you send it to Larissa, and she sends you a book.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah,
I love that.
We have a display of that up. And we have a couple of our smaller libraries just really, really eat that up, and they love that.
Absolutely. That, like, rolls right along with the reading program when I was in elementary school, Book It, where you would, you know, get punched out, and then your card would get punched out. It's not you. This is what editing is for when I write. So your card would get marked off, and then you would get to go get a personal pizza at Pizza Hut.
Nice.
So, you know, that was a big thing. It was like, woo, if I read 10 books, I get a pizza at Pizza Hut.
Yeah, we had some partners, not the last 2 years so much, but we have had some local partners. Chick-fil-A, we have a minor baseball league team, minor league team in the next county over, and they do with the one of the local newspapers. So, yeah, there's a lot of great reading partners out there.
I love it. I think reading is one of the best things that you can ever do for yourself. And I'm not just saying that from an author standpoint. It is a way to take yourself into a place that exists in your mind, and it allows you to escape. I especially love books where I don't even realize I'm reading them anymore, where the words are almost just jumping off and straight into my brain. I can get so caught up, especially in fantasy. I don't know why. And especially in David Eddings fantasy, which, like I said, is from like the 80s. But I want it. I want it all. There are days where I'm like, I am not having the best of days. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go lose myself in a book, because it is a solitary thing. But then it doesn't have to remain that way, because after you read, well, first of all, you get populated with the characters, which I love. You get to experience a setting that you probably don't know, which I also love. But then you go and talk to your friends about it. And if they've read the book too, or something similar, you know, it's a great talking point to just be able to say, oh my gosh, you have chapter 12. Like, what did you think? And they're like, oh, I know, chapter 12. Like, that's awesome. I absolutely, I love book clubs. We have a couple of independent bookstores around here who do book clubs. And if you're reading my book, I'm showing up for your book club. because I want to talk to you about it. Although it's funny, sometimes people take, they look at certain things in books and they're like, so tell me why, you know, you made this decision. I'm like, ooh, I didn't make that decision. Like, that was, that wasn't deliberate at all. I don't know why her couch is purple. You know, they're like, well, but it was very significant in the, and I'm like, ooh, well, it wasn't. But now I have to come up with something because I don't want to sound like I'm not intelligent and I didn't mean to do that. But, you know, everybody, I also, like, if you read my books, you'll find that I don't detail what the character looks like over and over again. And that is a deliberate choice because I really want her to be whatever you see her as. I don't want to shake your imagination by reinserting what she looks like. To me, she looks like whatever you think she looks like. And I love books that I would just adore walking around a corner and finding myself face to face with this character and then saying, hey, you want to go get some tea? Let's have a discussion. I'm so fascinated by what it is that you do. And so, like, they become friends. And I love that, too, about Cozy Mystery series. I love that Cozy Mysteries are series because you could be, like, 6-7 books in and you're like, oh, I cannot wait to visit with so-and-so because I want to see what's going on with their lives. It's like reading the Christmas letter, you know? You get those Christmas letters. I still do anyway. Where it's like, and then Jimmy did this year, and you know, Shauna did this, and we went on vacation. I love those. I love being able to like minutely catch up. We do that on Facebook too. You know, watching to see what your high school friends did, and so to me, a book is kind of the same thing. And I get to ride along with you, the character, as you do the thing. And there's nothing better.
Well, I'd love to talk to you a whole lot longer, but it's almost 12 o'clock.
I told you I wasn't going to run out of anything to say.
It's been really great.
This is wonderful.
I want to thank you again, Gabby Allen. We'll have you back when your next book comes out.
I love that.
And you'll send me all your links for your social media, and I'll drop them into the chat when I get back.
Awesome.
So your book, Much Ado About Nauticaling. Yep. Came out at the end of July, and there you go. Oh, wow.
Because why not?
Why not? Of course. Why not?
But yes, I do have the door hangers and, you know, whatever, like I said, whatever you decide to do with that, just let me know and I can give you some more if you're looking for that. And I so appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk to you. I love librarians. I love libraries and, you know, being able to discuss the book with someone who loves books too is just always such a pleasure.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun. Jim Gano will be in at 1 o'clock to take care of business. And until next week, remember, wherever you are, you can call, stop in, or go online. Your library is always there for you. Thanks again. Have a good day.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Heather Mercer, founder of Global Hope, was kidnapped by the Taliban in 2001 before being rescued by U.S. Special Forces. Today, Ms. Mercer has friends in Afghanistan and tells Fox News the Taliban has blocked access for Americans to get to the Kabul airport.
Yes, the last 3 days we've been working very hard to get an Afghan family, a mother and her 6 kids, all U.S. citizens and green card holders, out of Afghanistan, and the situation is dire. 3 attempts, 72 hours, and they have been unable to breach the perimeter around the airport. And we've had U.S. People in the airport anticipating their arrival, and it is just impassable. So the situation is extreme, very dangerous. Yesterday, they were throwing tear gas, shooting bullets, and hitting people back with wooden batons.
USA Radio News.
Nielsen says more than 30 million Americans are now tuning in to Newsmax TV. It's one of the biggest media stories. Newsmax is available on all major cable systems. And if you cut the cord and don't get cable, you can still get Newsmax. Find it on your smart TVs like Samsung, LG, and more. Just go to your smart TV channel guide or download the free Newsmax app. Newsmax also streams free on Roku, Zumo, Pluto, Amazon Fire, or TiVo. And 7 million people have the Newsmax app on their smartphone. It takes seconds to download it on your phone, and there's no paywall or subscription. So watch Newsmax for breaking news anytime, anywhere. President Trump says Newsmax is really good, and Forbes calls Newsmax a news powerhouse. Find out why tens of millions of Americans are watching Newsmax TV and going to Newsmax.com for breaking news. It's a source you can trust. Newsmax is real news for real people.
The Biden administration is advising vaccinated Americans to get a booster vaccine shot. Tim Berg from the Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau reports.
President Biden is telling Americans to get a booster shot. At the White House, Biden explaining it's easier to get the third shot, saying folks will show up with their vaccination card and get a booster. As far as why now is the time to get your booster shot, Dr. Susanna Mills tells USA Radio News.
So the idea of this third shot is really to boost back up the immune system's response to the COVID virus as it starts to wane, which we believe happens about 8 months after completing your first vaccination series.
September 20th, the first day those booster shots will be offered.
The recommendation at this time does not apply to the nearly 14 million Americans who received the single-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine. USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
President Biden, speaking to media ally ABC News on Wednesday, says the intelligence community let him down on assessing the Afghan withdrawal.
I think there was no consensus. If you go back and look at the intelligence reports, they said that it was more likely to be sometime by the end of the year.
Former CIA station chief Dan Hoffman on Fox News gives his assessment.
Well, I think there was just a willful decision to ignore the facts on the ground. President Trump negotiated the Doha peace agreement with the Taliban going back to February 2020. Two key components of that were that the Taliban would promise to sever their ties with al-Qaeda, which they did not, and to start a real intra-Afghan dialogue in earnest, designed to bring some reconciliation and a new government in Afghanistan. Neither of those things happened. And I think President Biden was just focused on removing our troops, no matter the consequences. He mischaracterized this as an endless war. Let's remember, we have troops in South Korea deployed there as a tripwire. If they weren't there, I have no doubt that Kim Jong-un and North Korea would likely attack South Korea. In this case, we had a stabilization force of just under 3,000 troops, 6,000 of our NATO partners, as well as about 18,000 contractors keeping that air capability that was so important to deterring the Taliban. And for that, we were able to keep our nation safe.
I'm Lance Pry, USA Radio News.